The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Probably the most unusual person on the ballot, given his background, is Gerard Hutch, as he's being named on the posters, better known probably as Jerry the Monk Hutch from crime coverage over the years. This is a man who has, I think in total, something like 30 convictions, larceny, burglary, assault, car theft, joyriding, malicious damage. And according to a number of journalists and a number of reports, his gang would have been involved in some of the largest heists in Irish history, like the 92 AIB robbery and the Brinks Allied heist. He is running for election, and he has sat down to explain why he's running for election in three lengthy, in-depth podcasts that have been given to Nicola Tallant, who is host of the Crime World podcast. The first of those has dropped. I think the second is due out tomorrow, and Nicola is with us this morning. Good morning, Nicola.
Good morning, Anton.
Can we get, first of all, you sat down with Gerry Hutch, and you would have known him professionally over the years. Can we start off with his reason for running? Because there is a cynical view that says that this is a clever way to get out of potential legal proceedings in Spain.
No, I don't think there's any suggestion of that from him anyway. There's his reasons for running. He says he's the people's choice. In other words, he's been asked over and over again over the years to run for politics, be it local or national. He made the decision ultimately. He was thinking about it this time, and he made the decision ultimately. He tells us on the first part of the podcast there dropped this morning because of the raid in Spain, which landed him in prison a couple of weeks ago, just days after he had sort of the story emerged that he was considering running for general election. And he very strongly feels that Irish Gardaí sort of encouraged their Spanish counterparts to go in and shut him down. That's what he believes. Obviously, there's been a long running investigation in Spain, and I'm no doubt that the Gardaí would dispute that version of events, but that's what he believes, and that sent him over the edge. And he said, right, I'm going to go for election. I won't be silenced. I'm going to do it this time. So, yeah, you know, you spoke about actually Gerry Hutch's convictions and those armed robberies. I do think it's fair to say that they are all from the 1980s and 1990s. Last year, he was found not guilty by the Special Criminal Court of a murder charge to do with the Regency Hotel attack, and he walked free from court. So he's before the courts in Spain, but Spain is a very different setup to here. The suspects are before the courts, if you know what I mean. So there's no charges actually levelled, and it's around a wide-ranging money laundering investigation. When he came through the airport the other day, he said he was innocent and he wasn't worried about it in the slightest.
And of course, he has been central in the Kinahan-Hutch feud, or at least his family have been central, given that he has lost a brother and a number of other relatives in assassinations during that, and that he has been the subject of threatened assassinations and gunmen sent, we are told, to his, tried to find him in Lanzarote. He talked to you about all of that and about what he sees as his role as being a mediator in the conflict.
Yeah, and of course, I find this sort of stuff really fascinating for myself, you know, working in crime, and, you know, you're working around organized crime, and it's really important to get the first hand story every now and then. You know, you're not on the phone every day to people who are that significant in feuds or in sort of the arena of organized crime. So he speaks about how Kinahan assassins came from in Lanzarote. Now, we knew this, it's part of the story of the feud, really. But he actually speaks about how he was in the pub in Lanzarote having a drink, that he looked and saw the hitmen come in masked with baseball caps, and he didn't run out the back as been commonly believed. He had to hide in the pub behind a pillar, and he watched them pass him with the guns. It's quite dramatic, really, to be honest with you. And he speaks about how they came from a second time the next day while he was in Lanzarote, which he's lived in, by the way, since 2012. He lives between Ireland and Lanzarote. But the second day, he talks about it being an even closer shave, that he had to walk quickly towards the gunman because he felt if he ran away, he'd have been shot. And on this occasion, the hitman hadn't got his glasses on and didn't see him. And really, For me, that's the typical story of a lot of these assassination attempts. You kind of believe them to be very organized, highly skilled criminals. But we see again and again, you know, it's the little things, I suppose, that unfurl these plots to kill.
So does he believe at this point that his life is no longer under threat?
No, he doesn't. He still has to, I suppose, watch his back, you know, be very aware of his surroundings. I'd say he's got used to living like that. He had been, since 2016, after his brother Eddie was shot dead, just in the days after the Regency Hotel, he was warned or became aware of what is a 1 million bounty was on his head. And he left the country, and he describes what he did over those, you know, preceding years, and how he travelled around the world and went, you know, through airports with 22 keys in his hand luggage. And they were keys for places he'd stayed. He kept on the move. He went to Asia. He describes in the podcast as well how at one point he was in the Emirates and he called into MTK, which was the boxing firm linked with Daniel Kinahan. He called into those offices and looked to speak to Kinahan. So, yes, look, he's had a fascinating life. I don't think, like him or loathe him, nobody can say he hasn't had an incredibly, an extraordinary life. And particularly really over those last 10 years since, you know, his sort of retirement out to Lanzarote, his few years of just dipping in and out of the sea, I suppose, enjoying whatever fruits of his labour he had. And he was drawn back into this situation with his members of his family getting involved in the feud with Kinahan.
So reading between the lines of the discussion you've had with him, what's your take for his reason to want election? Because you would have had to thought, I mean, if he is successful, he ends up on the backbenches as an independent. He's likely to be something, I would have thought, of a political pariah in the Dáil, given his criminal background. So what does he think he can achieve?
So he basically, I mean, he speaks about, and we've sort of had to break it down because it was a really long interview. So I'm sure you can imagine you can't really expect people to sit through sort of 2 hours plus. So we've broken it down. The next episode will be sort of his early years. And the third episode on Tuesday morning is going to be largely around his political ideology and what he hopes to achieve. But I suppose to keep it simple, he basically, his hero, he says, is Tony Gregory. He says he doesn't believe one day he could walk in his shoes, but he believes Tony Gregory was a representative of the people of the area. He said they've had politicians ever since, but no representatives, and he would like to aspire to represent them. And he, you know, he has his issues around homelessness, you know, around funds for that area and all the kind of things you could, you know, you could imagine he would. His policies around immigration, but ultimately he wants to represent the people. He sees himself as the people's choice and somebody who will go forth into the Dáil and do his best to sort of represent the ordinary person living there in the north inner city.
And does he position himself as reformed and or repentant for anything that he has done?
Well, you see, he's... Actually, I did ask him at one point, has he changed? And he said he believes he has. Now, we all change, don't we, as the years go by. He's 61 now. And as he does point out and is fair too, his convictions really date back to, you know, the 1980s and 90s. He's had nothing since then. So while the Gardaí believe that he is a patriarch of the Hutch organised crime gang, as has been described in the Special Criminal Court, he would say that he isn't, that he is a sort of the family, the head of the family, as opposed to a crime gang. He'd be very strong in that. And, you know, he would deny that he, or certainly not engage. He's not going to say anything, is he, that's going to, you know, land him back in court. So, you know, he's not going to sit there and talk to me about he did this, he did that. He's denying he's involved in crime. He's the head of a family and not a crime gang, he says.
Well, if you want to hear more, the podcast is the Crime World Podcast. The host, Nicola Tallant. Nicola, thank you very much.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.